On air at 99.7 FM and online at oldhamcommunityradio.com, this is Community Keyboards with Ian Wolstenholme.
Again, and welcome to this edition of Community Keyboards on air and online. Well, we've got a mixed bag of goodies this time. Later, I'll be chatting with organist Aaron Hawthorne about his creepy project. But before that, and to get things underway musically, let's hear this great arrangement of Darling, Come and Look from Verdi's opera Rigoletto, played in the style of Klaus Wunderlich on Yamaha PSR 9000 Pro keyboard by Alan Murray. There we go, Alan Murray, and another superb tribute track to Klaus Wunderlich. Well, I thought it was about time we met Alan, who hopefully joins me on the line now. Hello, Alan, are you there?
Hello, Ian. Thank you very much for phoning. It's lovely to speak to you.
You've been an occasional musical contributor to the programme now for quite a while. It really is a great sound from that Yamaha keyboard, but I know that you are an admirer of Klaus. How much of an admirer would you say you are?
Oh, a very strong admirer. I've listened to Klaus since my parents bought me the 24 favourite songs everybody loves to hear, the film themes edition. This was in the early part of 1973. This is when, before I started organ lessons, actually. And as soon as I heard the actual sound of that Hammond H100, which Klaus played on that album, I became really into that type of music. You know, I thought, ooh, I'd love to play something similar to that, you know. So my parents enrolled me for organ lessons in the September of 1973. And I've gone on from there. I've never stopped playing and sort of improved my technique over the years, you know. But regarding Klaus's music, I'm a really strong fan of his, and I've picked up an awful lot of musical techniques from him, both from the sound point of view and also the musical point of view as well, you know. So it's really been a real educational step for me to listen to Klaus's music.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, actually, Alan, because your arrangements, as we often said, do have a very authentic sound and feel to them. How do you come up with the ideas? Because obviously Klaus's repertoire was far and wide and so prolific. The aria from Rigoletto there, I'd not come across before until, well, quite literally only a couple of weeks or so ago, when somebody gave me a copy of one of the LPs which it was featured on. I mean, where did the ideas originate, would you say?
Well, with Klaus's music, he took an old song and redesigned it, if you like, musically. So he actually added a different rhythm or played it in a different time signature. And this is the sort of thing that I'm still learning how to do now, really. So it doesn't really sound like the original score as it appears on the sheet music. So that's what I like to do with many of my songs, is to, obviously not with every song, but with particularly classical music, I like to sort of redesign or rearrange the music so it sounds completely different from the original. So that's the sort of thing I like to do on a regular basis with my music, you know.
Yeah. I wonder how impressed do you think he would have been with his sound available in a very compact keyboard like you play, you know, the Yamaha, and carry it under one arm? I often wonder what he would have made of it these days.
I would have been very impressed, although I know Klaus didn't like the automatic system that the keyboards have, but I try to avoid using those where I can, you know. But obviously I use some of the style drums, but I actually put my own arrangements in with the left hand for the organ. I try and keep my organ technique alive with keyboard playing, you see, so I'm not actually using the automated system to its full capacity like most keyboards are today, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's close. What about Alan Murray? I mean, let's just find out. Where are you calling us from today, Alan?
I'm at home in Connors Quay, which is Deeside in North Wales.
Okay.
And I'm actually sitting in my music room at the moment as we speak, so. My early career, of course, I was listening to classical music and pop music at a very early age, in the early 60s. And I used to go to my grandparents and listen to piano players such as Charlie Coons and Russ Conway. My grandparents also had LPs of the Black and White Minstrel Show, which obviously was a sing-along type of event, which encouraged me to play all these tunes even today, you know. And it's just gone on from there. My career in school started on the acoustic guitar when I was 7, actually. And I had guitar lessons in school, which was unbelievable, because I managed to get guitar lessons in between lessons in the primary school. So I took guitar lessons up there. And I formed my own guitar group when I was 8.
Good grief.
My primary school.
Wow.
So that's my earlier career. Of course, I learned all about chords on the guitar, which was a good basis for when I started organ lessons in 1973. So that's my earlier career. I started the organ lessons at the old Cranes Music Centre, which was at Wrexham at that particular time. And we had two courses in the group class where we were taught 12 people at a time. And after that course had finished, I had 2 years of private lessons with the same tutor. And it just went on from there. He actually taught me all about technique and how to play the organ as if you're in charge of your own one-man band.
So.
And that's what's gone on. I've continued to practice and improve your technique and make sure you sound better today than what you did yesterday. That's my
That's the mantra kind of thing.
Make sure you're better today, instead of how you were yesterday. And it certainly works anyway. Continual practicing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. I suppose the last couple of years or so have been a little bit restrictive with the COVID situation. But are you managing now to get out and about to perform in public?
Yes. I play in a couple of hotels in the North Wales district. And I play in care homes as well all around North Wales. So I'm back at work from that point of view. But during the pandemic, I actually was busy actually playing in my own music room, learning new songs, both for the podcast, for your program, and for when I got back to work last year. So I've never stopped playing, really. I've carried on doing it.
Superb. It's good to catch up because I've had one or two people say well this chap Alan Murray he sounds a real good musician. Where is he? What's he all about? And so I'm glad that we've been able to just catch up very quickly on the programme today and have a little chat about your obviously enjoyable musical career so far, Alan.
It's very kind of thank you very much for all those people who've made such kind comments about my music.
And we must say thanks for sending the arrangements. Please do keep them coming. I know, as I say, listeners certainly seem to enjoy them.
Oh, that's very kind. Thank you to all the listeners. And I'd like to thank Alex McAllister, who is also another contributor on your programme,
indeed,
for including me on the Klaus Wunderlich podcast, which is another podcast that was devised by the late John Cuffin, who you've heard of. He sadly passed away last November.
Yes.
And that podcast is continuing. And I'd like to thank Alex for playing my tracks on his program as well as your program as well, Ian. So thank you very much for including my tracks on your program.
We all try to be one big, happy, inclusive family.
That's
the beauty of the keyboard world.
Yes. Another important thing, Ian, is to listen to other organists as well, because you can pick up ideas from other musicians as well. Even though they probably sound completely different from yourself, that's what I do. I listen to many different musicians, organists, pianists, and pick up ideas from there. So it's very good.
Wonderful. Alan, lovely to chat today. Thank you very much indeed for your time. We've got another of your great arrangements to include now. This is a superb collection of quick steps, and I'm sure listeners will know Play a Simple Melody, Walk in the Black Forest, and Java. For the moment, Alan Murray, thanks very much indeed.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much for including me on your programme.
Murray on Yamaha. Now, even though he's provided enough tuition hints and tips over the recent past on Ask Andy, our good friend Andy Carville is having a bit of a well-deserved break, but we'll still be able to enjoy his musical contributions. His timing, in fact, could not have been any more spot on with this latest arrangement on Korg PA-1000 of Summertime from Porgy and Bess, which arrived during the recent UK heatwave. A stunning version, which I hope you'll enjoy right now.
Thank you.
Andy Carville on Korg. Well, do stay with me after the break as Aaron Hawthorne joins me from home in Glasgow with news about his latest tour spectacular.
Featuring all its best from the King of Instruments on Community Keyboards.
With Ian Wolstenholme.
And welcome back to the programme. Now, I'm hoping that you won't have nightmares after hearing from my next guest on the programme. Here he is at the Saltair Wurlitzer with a piece of original music entitled Spiders, after which all will be revealed. Music from Nosferatu, a symphony of horror. And it's a long overdue warm welcome return to the programme. Aaron Hawthorne, welcome back, young sir.
Hello, it's wonderful to be talking to you.
I think the last time we met, if my memory serves me right, was down in London at the Young Theatre Organist of the Year competition. Sometime, it seems like a lifetime ago, but then again, we've had a bit of an interruption between then and now with something called a pandemic.
I think it must have been 2018 or something like that, wasn't it?
I think it was, yeah. I mean, that whole debacle must have had a tremendous effect on a musician. I know we've broached this subject with so many players before, but what was it like for you when the virus descended?
Oh, it was a very dark time. It really was. And I don't mince my words now when I talk about it, because I think what the wonderful thing about the pandemic was, if you can say there was anything wonderful about it, was that finally we all actually had a concept of what mental health was.
Indeed.
And I'm so glad that we finally talk about it a lot more as a society in general. To give you a bit of context, when the pandemic came upon our lives, that was sort of March 2020. And in the February, I had actually just returned from, being down in Worthing, playing a concert with David Lowe down at the Assembly Hall.
Mm.
And a few days before that, I had just came off of about 24 hours of flying from being over in Rochester in the USA, because they had me back since winning the 2019 Young Organist competition. So they had me back for a week or so of a few concerts. And that was wonderful. So I was starting to really, really love life. And it felt like things were really taking off. Things were going in a wonderful direction. And then, of course, the pandemic hit and it just came to a complete halt. And as I'm sure many people are aware and as many people have experienced, the sort of government and authorities weren't the quickest to tell self-employed people what to do.
Exactly. No, you're
so
quite
right. So I found myself...
Quite right.
Exactly. I found myself a week or two after, you know, having come off all these flights, jet-setting around, applying for a job in Tesco again because I thought, my goodness, I'm not going to be able to afford to live. And it was soul destroying because I've done the working in Tesco. I've done all that and I tried so hard to get away from it all. I didn't end up working in Tesco, but I did end up eventually working in a COVID test site, which was
really
the worst. Yes, absolutely, because I'd spent months doing nothing, yeah, you know, yeah. And you know, being on things like Universal Credit and things, mm-hmm. and I thought, you know what, I want to work, I want to do something with time. So the opportunity came where I took this job as a tester in a COVID test site, and it was one of the roughest jobs that I've ever had. And every minute that I've sat there, I thought, to think that this time last year I was out and about playing. So that was tough. Yeah. So then I made the decision a few months after that. I was like, you know what, I'm going to give it another go.
Yep.
This was in 2021 when things were starting to almost look a bit normal again. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to leave it, take a leap of faith, go back into freelancing. And that's when we done Phantom of the Opera
exactly.
last year.
Yeah, I was just going to say
that. And here we are.
Yeah.
And yeah.
You teamed up with Rosie, didn't you? Rosie Lavery. And
yeah.
I mean, that kind of must have been one of those light bulb moments when you finally... and I know this isn't a sort of a new concept, Aaron, about, you know, the cinema organ being used as an instrument to accompany silent films, because that's what they were there for in the first place. But it always seems to have been a medium that's kind of been put on the back burner until the likes of, well, you said David Lowe, David Ivory as well, and so, you know, one or two other players who do you know, spend quite a bit of time as a performer in a silent movie accompaniment kind of role. I mean, the Phantom of the Opera tour, given that it kind of came along when audiences were still living with this COVID, how successful was it from your point of view?
We had to call it a success because, as you say, we were battling against a really strange time. It wasn't a lockdown. It certainly wasn't. It wasn't post pandemic because it was very much still in the middle of the pandemic, but it was certainly post lockdown. And we knew that this was a massive gamble. So there were some places where we absolutely sold out. You know, it was great. And that was a wonderful feeling. And having been through the past couple of years of not doing that and just to be in a sold out cathedral or theatre, whatever, that was fantastic. Other places we could have definitely done with a few more bums on seats, but every single place that we went, through talking to the venue, the organisers, and talking to the audience afterwards, we were very aware that the audiences that were coming to this were, on the whole, brand new to either the venue, the organ, yeah. silent film, yeah. opera. There was something new for everyone, and that was one of the big goals because... Yeah. You know, on a personal sort of point of view, I wanted to, you know, really try and do something a bit fresh with, you know, theatre organ and with yep. silent film accompaniment. So it was wonderful talking to people who says, oh my goodness, I've never experienced anything like that before, or oh, I've been in the building so many times, but I didn't know it had an organ sort of thing.
Yeah,
so
from
that point of view, it was fantastic. Financially, I'm not sitting in a villa somewhere or a big fancy car, not at all. And financially, all we'd really done was broke even.
Yeah.
But for the momentum that started, it was a huge success.
Yeah, people would say that you logically have to start somewhere, but it is often a lot of work for, as you say, maybe not the reward that you would have hoped for. But listen, I mean, you set the bar very high. And if we come to the present now, Aaron, you're... The next challenge, you're at Lutton for punishment, young man. Do you realise this? The next challenge, it's another tour. You've got dates mm-hmm. for October here in the UK and Amsterdam. And mm-hmm. But the subject matter troubles me a little because, let's be honest, you only need to mention that timeless classic silent horror movie, Nosferatu. And even the burliest Glaswegian would probably hide behind the sofa. Am I not far off the mark?
Well, it depends if you class me as a burly Glaswegian. But it's terrifying. It is terrifying. And that's the thing that we found with Phantom and a lot of these sort of horror, thriller, genre, silent films. They were terrifying for the audiences when they came out, but there's almost an extra element added on of watching it 100 years later.
Yes.
You know, that anything in black and white really to a modern audience is spooky. It's scary. They find it a bit, you know, spooky, and especially when it's that sort of double time, sort of sped up footage, they find that spooky as well. So combine that with what is genuinely very scary storyline and a fabulous production. Yeah, it's quite the spooky night out. It really is.
Do you know something? Yes, an admission, I honestly don't think I've ever seen the film from start to finish. So I'm really looking forward to it on a number of different levels. Before we just list these dates that you've set, apart from the sort of spooky nature and this kind of thing, what really made you choose the subject of Nosferatu, a symphony of horror? I like saying that. It's great for radio.
It's wonderful. Perhaps you can record your sort of pre-show.
We need to do that.
So, why do you do any silent film? What's the reason behind it? The reason that Phantom happened last year was that Rosie and I had previously done one showing of Phantom in Glasgow before the pandemic, and it was a huge success. We'd done it either on Halloween or the day before Halloween. It was sold out. It was the busiest that we've ever seen a concert there. It was fantastic. The atmosphere was electric. We did sort of clock between ourselves and said, okay, we've got something there. So when it came round to us talking about doing a tour, we thought, okay, we remember Phantom worked really well. Why don't we try and do it in a couple of venues around the place, around that sort of Halloween time? And yeah, the Phantom tour just, again, confirmed that it's a very marketable thing, doing a horror silent film around Halloween. So yes, here we are with Nosferatu. And when I sort of decided earlier this year, you know what, I want to make sure these audiences are going to continue to grow, and I absolutely love doing this, and for as long as we are going to get people coming through the door, I hope to be doing things like this. So I was researching what sort of films would be appropriate, again looking for the sort of spookiness element, because I thought the Halloween thing is the most marketable way of doing it. And yeah, I very quickly realised that Nosferatu is celebrating its 100th anniversary this year.
Yeah.
So obviously it was released in 1922. It just kind of made sense. And that's the wonderful thing that I realised, that if I so desire, the next 3, 4, 5 tours are laid out for me in that sense, because, you know, next year we've got the Hunchback of Notre Dame celebrating its 100th birthday in 1925. It'll be Phantom's turn.
I can see a franchise lying ahead here. So
that would be nice from a self-employed point of view, if it took off as a business. Yeah, absolutely.
And I'll be back with Aaron Hawthorne after these words.
On air at 99.7 FM and online at oldhamcommunityradio.com, this is Community Keyboards with Ian Wolstenholme.
Andrew Gilbert and that recording of Birth of the Blues made at home especially for the programme on his Roland AT900 Platinum organ, and a chance there to hear a very clever nod to the old Baldwin PR200 organ model from the late 1960s with its distinctive multi-reed wah-wah voice. Even the pro players have their idols, and you may have noticed a nod to Harold Smart, who encouraged Andrew when he embarked on his musical career. Well, don't forget that one of our 2 monthly programmes now features some of the great traditional electronic and theatre organs of the past, mainly from the original LPs, and I know many listeners enjoy hearing such. Well, let's return to my conversation now with Aaron Hawthorne, who starts with this piece, At the Beach, and music from the forthcoming Nosferatu, a Symphony of Horror tour. mean, there's no excuse not to go along and see the show now. As we said, we're on the right side of the COVID thing. You've chosen some terrific venues, haven't you? And it starts on the 1st of October. The Tuschinski Theatre in Amsterdam. I mean, that's described as one of the most beautiful cinemas in the world. Just one date in Amsterdam, Aaron?
At the moment, yes. In terms of the tour, just the one date so far. But there's discussions happening about doing things over there. I can't say too much.
We won't press on that part. But I mean, back in the in the UK on Terra Firma, I mean, we've got a mixture of churches, cinemas, concert halls throughout the month, including one of my favourite venues at the Victoria Hall at Saltaire on the 13th of October. Of course, with 13th of October, I should say, with the ex-Oldham COS World. I mean, these instruments really lend themselves to silent film accompaniment, as we've said, don't they, Aaron? I mean, you very kindly sent through some little musical snippets, and thank you ever so much for doing that. Ironically, on the ex-Gaumont Wurlitzer, now of course at Saltaire, and you told me that you were just sat at the organ with the iPad watching the film, trying to get some semblance of motifs and themes and this kind of thing. Does that therefore mean that you literally do all these performances on the fly? Are they kind of, you must be so talented to do that, you know, are they not do you not have hundreds of sheets of manuscript in front of you? Do you just do things what you like on the day, depending on the instrument specification? Maybe
it pretty much is that. And what I have to say is that anyone who accompanies silent film, everyone has their own approach to it. Some people will score out every millisecond of the film. Other people will do a sort of hybrid of, okay, I want to include these themes and sort of bridge my way to and from. But I've always just liked to sit down and play what you see, essentially. It's almost a catchphrase, say what you see. But I like to just play what I see and play what I get from the film, sort of the emotions that are coming to me. Phantom was a little bit different because having another musician, Rosie, singing, we tied that in with some opera extracts, which did have to be rehearsed, but everything between that was improvised. And it was nice to have that sort of anchor, but I'm excited for Nosferatu because this is just me sitting at the organ and telling you, here's what I'm getting from the film, and I hope that matches what you feel and what you're experiencing from it. It's not to say that I find that easy, but I am certainly in a very comfortable place with it, and I think when it comes to improvisational skills, you're always learning something, you're always learning a sound that you like, and you sort of hold on to that. And this is why I don't like to sit down too much with the film before performing it, because I like for it to be fresh. It's obviously good to know cues, you know, when someone's going to fall down the stairs or something like that. But I don't like to be bored of it by the time that I'm going to sit down and play for it. I like for there to be a bit of adrenaline with me saying, okay, I need to be focused here to make sure everything happens at the right moment. So yes, it's unknown. And I think that's the thing I'm trying to market with this as well, is that anything could go wrong at any minute. And I think that's brilliant. I love that.
Well, I'm looking at the list here, Aaron. We've got shows at the Summerlee Museum, Bloomsbury Baptist Church, the Worthing Assembly Hall, Nia Penrae, St John's Kirk in Perth, the Bournemouth Pavilion, Woking Leisure Centre, one I'm coming along to, the Plaza Cinema in Stockport, and that's the 31st of October. That's Halloween. I think I'm a glutton for punishment on that one. those dates, there's an awful lot of information there. All the show details are on the Nosferatu 2022 page of your website, which, remind us, is?
Well, my website is hothorgan.com.
Perfect. Nice and simple. We like easy things like that. We do. Am I right in saying, Aaron, that once all this is over, are you going to return to ATOS in 2023? Did I read that somewhere? I've seen something.
Yes, I am. I can see it now. It's official.
Right. I must have got it from somewhere. Sorry, Dave, I put you on the spot. I didn't mean to. But I'm sure it was from an official press release of some description. But congratulations. Are you looking forward to that?
I really am. Again, it was one of those things with the pandemic, because I had won the competition in 2019. And part of winning that competition, part of the sort of reward for it, is that ATOS bring you over to the next convention so that then you can play your retiring winner's spot. You sort of hand over the title. So that involves playing a sort of half a concert sort of thing. So that should have happened in 2020, but of course, I don't need to say what happened there. And ATOS have happily booked me to go over to the Chicago convention next year, because that's the first convention that they're running where they're comfortable with having a totally international audience, international artist lineup. So that'll be wonderful. I think it was the wonderful John Atwell who keeps flagging up that I must be the longest holding title of that competition well, in history.
And you need to milk it for every week that it's that it's available.
Exactly.
Anyway, Aaron Lovelett, Nosferatu, A Symphony of Horror. I still want to say that in a symphony of horror. Is coming to a venue, as we've said, near you. The very best of success with it, my friend, and everything else that you're doing. Thanks for sharing the information with our listeners. It's great to catch up with you.
Thank you so much. It's an absolute pleasure.
And a reminder, it's www.hawthorgan.com. That's hawthorgan.com for full details of Aaron's tour. Now, I've always been an early to bed, early to rise sort of chap, and with the dog in tow most mornings, do tune into Radio 4 just after the World Service ends and the 5:15 shipping forecast starts. And it seems that Andrew Gilbert's dad, a master mariner, would often do likewise, but at the other end of the day. The sailing by theme would fill the gap between close down and the forecast, and to take us to our close down this time, here's Andrew on Roland Atelier once again, and that piece written by Ronald Binge in 1963.
Thank you.
And you know what they say about seagulls. Well, that's just about all we have time for on this edition. Thanks once again to my guests, Aaron and Alan, and a reminder that, as always, you can replay any part of the programme from our website, www.communitykeyboards.co.uk, from where there are lots of ways to contact the programme or follow us on social media. For the moment, then, this is Ian Wolstenholme saying thanks very much for listening. Take care, all the best, and bye-bye.
Keyboards with Ian Wolstenholme.
This latest edition of Community Keyboards was recorded before the announcement of the death of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. We are deeply saddened to learn of this sad news and thank her for her service over her incredible 70-year reign. We extend our sincere condolences to all members of the royal family at this sad time.